Morning, everybody. Welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I am your host, Sean Benson. Oh, man, am I excited today. By the way, I'm recording this not having posted my last three podcasts. And it's the beauty of the CarCast is that it lets me get at it. It lets me chat. There's a free associative kind of thing to it. I'm passing Milton Kelso Conservation Area right now, and it's just perfection now. Absolute perfection. I think it was Jeffrey Heward who quoted on my page. Like, I'm just so glad I live in a world with Octobers. It's perfection, man. It's so nice. But in any case, it's funny because the work, which I like to avoid in life, is actually uploading it and, you know, making sure the there's the little photo in the description and then it kicks over to iTunes okay, because most people listen through iTunes. The easy part's hitting record on my phone with my headset on in the car while I'm driving anyways. So I obviously do the easy part and then kind of go, ugh, gotta upload the podcasts. So you'll be hearing this long after I record it, but that's okay. Today is a bit of a timeless one I want to start with. So I always talk about this guy, but I want to sort of start with a little dedication this podcast to my karate teacher, Sensei Randy Dauphin. And part of the reason is, you know, I'm feeling like a million bucks right now. And it is because I went Wednesday night down for sword. And then this morning we did some more. And that is a lot for me to be driving back and forth because lately I've been bagging off the drive. And it is a hard drive and I am quite busy. So, you know, no excuses. It's been fucking at least a... Well, at least 8 years since I've ever lied to that guy about why I wasn't going to karate class. And, you know, we've worked through all that. So my point is this. It's all good, but I get a phone call a few weeks ago from him saying, listen, I'd like to see you training in front of me more. I know you're training. It's evident. And I know you're busy. But this is just, you know, as your teacher, I'd like to be instructing you more or else you know. You can't get the benefit of being my student. That was it. No edge, no drama. I said, I hear you. And by the way, it took me 3 weeks to find a night where I could get down. But the first chance I could, I went down. The thing is, like any habit, I have an old karate habit. If you know, that drive I've done so many times. Next thing I know, I'm just like, oh, wait. I think I can squeak out a Saturday morning. By the way, I have to drive back to Toronto right now to do a fitting and a rehearsal for my next gig and then go back to Guelph for a dinner with the family that I've committed to. So, A, I could cancel the dinner. No, I don't want to. B, I could have not done karate this morning. Don't want to not do that. And I love driving and want to drive my car as much as absolutely possible between now and when the winter comes. Point is, I win all the way around there. Then I combine it with a golf game yesterday because I'm like, huh, that would make sense. Now I'm playing golf. And then because I'm playing golf and I've been hitting crappy scores in the low hundreds lately, I'm like, I don't want to play that badly and spend 30 bucks on October green fees. So I go to the driving range for $8 or whatever it is, and I get my score down to a 92. Do you understand everything that's happened since Wednesday? Because somebody who I choose to call sensei made one simple edgeless phone call doing what a sensei should do, which is saying, if you want to get better, you need to up your training this way. Now, here's what's important about this. It's a two-way street in that I've asked this person to be that for me. You know, nobody gets to walk around and just go, you need to do this and you need to do this. I mean, unsolicited advice is criticism. But when you say to someone, I want to be your student, and they go, great, call me sensei and do what I say, you know, that's solicited advice, so it's not criticism. And that's what's beautiful about it. And here's the thing. I've known this person for 23 years, and he's been my direct teacher for 18 of those now. 19. The relationship we have goes well beyond karate. But it's my job, not actually his, to make sure that the karate's first. It's always going to go better that way. Because in a way, we're sort of playing to each other's strengths. We know each other inside out. There's no hidden anything. That's the beauty of a long-term friendship like that. And by the way, I think more for him than for me. He knows me as well as anyone because of the revelatory nature of day after day, year after year, through thick and thin, through drug addictions, through big successes, me just putting on the white gi, whatever color belt I'm working at the time, and training as hard as I can. And it's tough to hide from someone when that's your thing. But here's another thing I want to throw out. You know, today we were doing a thing where we would do a cut together, and then he would watch me do that same cut, and then he'd do a different cut, because I'm still really basic in the Aido, in sword. And something that was so telling of why I am the way I am, having been taught by this guy for so long, and it's something I go on about, which is pursuit of excellence. So I've been working my sword hard, just not much in front of him, and then we get to move forward this week. But we did a cut together, and because he knows about 80 cuts and I know about 15 or whatever, there's very similar things that can happen and then subtle differences. So he blended two cuts and literally did the smallest of hand moves at the end of one cut from another cut. So he did it wrong. Now, let me back up a sec. Instead of watching me do my cuts, remember, he's ensuring that he's training at least as much as me. So that's first off, pursuit of excellence. And we both get that from our sensei, Sensei Legacy, who, as long as I've known him, doesn't sit and watch and tell you what to do. He's training in his gi, sweating with you. That's not true of everybody who becomes a master of something. You know, sometimes mastery is a way to start coasting. That's not the role models I have in life, especially not through this thing, and especially not with my dad writing his plays at age 87. I've got some pretty wicked role models for, we're doing this because we love it. I'm not doing it to get to a point where I can just, you know, hang around. Well, like, what the fuck? And that's the beautiful thing about it, is how much we love this shit. And so that little hand mistake he makes, and then he goes, let's do that one again. I love this, right? It's not, oh, well, I know how to do it. I'll do it right next time. It's, no, I made a mistake, so we're going to do it again, and I'm going to do it correctly. Now, there's a difference between doing it and it not being perfect because you're working on something, and in an actual mistake, moving your hand one way instead of another. There's no perfection, so at some point you have to stop training, even if you're just doing it for an hour or 15 minutes. But the idea of just doing it wrong and going, that'd be fine, that's something this guy doesn't do. And then that's something I get to learn from it. And I do think it's a lot of the reason why so much of what I talk about on the podcast has to do with, like, are you happy not being real good at the thing you're trying to do? Because, I mean, for what it's worth, like, I would like my career always to grow, but I am acting nationally and globally at a high level. And this guy's a world champion. You know, like, there's, things are kind of working in the arenas on which we're most focused. And I know for me, like, oh God, I got home the other night at 5 a.m. from set. After, by the way, being wrapped and then going up to Brian J. Smith and going, can I talk to you for a sec about how you were able to do what you were able to do a week and a half ago in that one scene? And because he's fucking hardcore awesome, he's like, oh my God, yeah. And we are like standing outside shivering, trying to work through, you know, these approaches to kind of elevate our game. And then I get home, and Emily, who's taught my class that night, I get into bed, and then, you know, she wakes up to pee or whatever, and then we chatted for 45 minutes about the minutiae of what it is we do And I'm like, you know, I had this moment on set where I realized that I think I can approach this one thing this way, and on my next project, what I'm going to try is this. And she's like, yeah, when I was teaching, you know, this one note I could have given a little better, but this other thing really elevated the student. And I mean, obviously there's a bit of like, we're trying to like come together on it, and we're proud of ourselves. So there's a bit of like, here's what I did well today, and here's what I did well. And that's a good thing. Like, I hope there's a component of that. But the other aspect is, here's what I didn't do well, or as well as I would have liked. They said, great job, thank you. But I know that I could have been a little deeper on that take. And again, that to me goes to the idea of, you know, sheathing the katana a little better when you can, when you have the chance and the time, instead of going, because the reality is, good enough isn't. And I think what's happening is I got that phone call from my teacher at just the right time for myself, because what happened for me was I used to be a perfectionist, so everything had to be the best. And if you've ever hung out with a perfectionist, they're actually narcissists, and they're actually egotists, and it's not really about being perfect. In a weird way, it's about, well, I'll just speak for myself. It was about subjugating myself. Let's create a standard called perfection, and then let's kind of always be grumpy that we're not attaining it, but we'll let that grumpiness be the opposite of probably the depression that would occur if we just lived a little and accepted the pain and the joy and the nowness of it all. I really believe that. That was my experience anyway, so that's all I can truly vouch for, but I see it around me. Perfectionism is an avoidance. It's an ego. Anything egotistical is an avoidance, right? There's the real thing happening, and then there's my ego that needs to spin it in a sort of, even if it's less than, a sort of childhood wounded protective, habitual, fake protective. And, you know, once we hit new levels, once we level up in this world, hopefully that can include a bit of shedding of ego, not an increasing of ego. Now, if you're a motherfucker who's like, what do you mean we didn't build that? I built that. It's like, A, no, you didn't. You're born into a world at a random time, not of your choosing. You're already out of the realm of possibly being able to claim you're responsible for kind of anything, which isn't totally true, obviously, but there's a kernel there that is true. Then, you know, again, accepting that a bunch of Tea Party fucks took Obama's statement of like, that road outside your house, you didn't build that, and just took the you didn't build that part as an insult to their entrepreneurship, aside from the asshole, small-minded, stupid nature of that, again, that is what that is. Like, whether you're right-wing or not, that is a perfect example of something where the stupidest members of something combined with the smartest, i.e. the manipulators, to totally mangle something and just basically bully it. Because that's all stupid people can do, right? Is go, you will fine, but I'll get 100 of us and we'll put on brown shirts and we'll kick down your door. And if you think I just made a Nazi illusion, yes, I did. Because that's the only way idiocy can really prevail is through force. It does often, by the way, but it doesn't mean it's right. We talked about that a few podcasts ago. Just because you bully someone into backing down doesn't make you right. You know, and again, Hitler shot himself in the head in a bunker. So whatever went on with that guy, he didn't feel good about his version of bullying. He felt bad about it enough to shoot himself in the head. So whatever. Now, some of you might go, yeah, well, you're doing the sword thing, and isn't that a thing of honor for a samurai to commit seppuku? Yeah, that's not what Hitler did in that bunker. He didn't come out, present himself to his whatever, you know, and then do it as an act of, I believed it. It was just like, uh-oh, oops, boom, fuckhead. So, you know, again, this time in my life, what happened was my perfectionism had to sort of give way. I couldn't live that way anymore. So I interestingly, and you know, I've talked about this with laying off a little, both internally and externally, I had to spend years, not days, because again, guys, when I'm, and ladies, when I'm talking about this stuff, you know how mad I get at the idea that you, like, take a six-week course in something, or read a half of a book, or even worse, a Facebook article, and go, oh yeah, I get that. No, you don't get it. You've been introduced in the mildest way. You haven't actually even dipped your toe in. You've, like, looked at the pool and gone, oh, that I should go swimming one day. Like, that's what you've done. It's real things, generally, that have a foundation, like getting good at guitar or getting good at, you know. Like, I love Sensei Legacy, my first and still karate instructor. But he's one of the people who doesn't get how hard I work sometimes, only because every time I play guitar around him, he goes, man, you're just one of these guys who can just whatever. And it's like, no, I'm not. Like, I wish I was. I've spent so long in my life playing guitar. It's probably one of the things I've done most in my life. And I feel like I'm just okay at it. And I, by the way, if you were to hear me play, I'm just okay at it. Like, it's a reality. There's really good players and there's me, but I'm at the sort of low end of really good because I can at least play, like, professionally or whatever. The point, though, is that that didn't just come to me, you know? The first 4 months is where gifted works. You know, where you can kind of go, oh, that's how a chord works, because I'd played piano, and okay, this, ooh, just do this, and it's like, oh, wow, look, he's taking to that very easily. But that doesn't let you alternate pick well. That doesn't let you sweep pick or run scales. You need to learn that shit and work that shit. And so again, it's a well-intentioned thing when someone like that says that, but it's wrong. The change took years. So, for years, I've been laying off myself, giving myself a little breathing room. And even now, I got the bit of the dad bod going on, and that was a bit a part of that. And, you know, spent the last couple weeks hacking butts on set and in New York, and that was a bit of a part of it. But I'm ready for good enough not to be good enough again, because for a number of years, I actually had to let good enough be good enough. I hope that makes sense what I'm saying, because there was a real paralysis that was coming from my perfectionism, which is, you know, like Barn Wedding, this film that we're going to sell and you're going to see, it, I wouldn't have been able to make it under a, this has to be brilliant mantle. I made it under the, what's important is that I trust I have inherent skills, I trust the people that I'm working with, and then we're just gonna make sure we do it as opposed to talk about it. So in a way, the only thing that was a superlative was the doing of it. Everything else was sort of a one moment at a time, I don't know if this is any good, but it's happening, versus everybody who wishes they were making a movie or has talked about it or is in school studying it. They may one day make a better movie than me, but right now I'm not studying movie making, I'm making a movie. And I needed to do that for me. But my next film, I'm going to take a lot more care with, both on the producing, i.e. financing side, so that I have the best resources, including talent. Well, obviously, we had boundless talent in Barn Wedding, but I'm talking access to name players so the talent blends with business and then we can get more funding, et cetera, et cetera. These are things, A, I had to learn through Barn Wedding, but also that I want to take the care with. And again, just like with my martial arts, I've been doing real well with it. I've been training nonstop. But there's a next level above good enough that I'm ready to return to. And the beauty is that A, my hip's feeling better, and B, I get to return there with the foundation of never having stopped training in 22 years, even if at times it has been just good enough training. And that's a real exciting thing for me. And again, that's why I started this and continue to sort of throw this out to Randy. Sensei Dauphin to me. That's what I call him. Sensei. Because, again, it's just one of those lucky phone calls that isn't lucky. It's what I've asked him to be to me, and it's what he is to me, which is the best damn teacher I could ask for. And also what's important is that I let him teach me. Right? Like, it was real easy for me to, because of our friendship, enjoy, which I always will, one aspect of our relationship. But what it also did was it negated me letting him be for me the thing he is best to me, which is my teacher. So then that to me goes to the idea of, again, like, whenever there's an issue in anything, it's usually that we put ourselves in a position. So I get to go and now be a student more than I have been lately. And all of a sudden what I get, and I didn't even realize I was missing, by the way, is I get my sensei back. The badass who's a master. Because as a friend, you know, friendships, as I've talked about, have to be two-way streets. They have to constantly grow. They have to be a give and take. I mean, that is, for me, what a friendship needs to be. The karate relationship can be different than that, and in many ways should be. And I like that with this guy. And so I actually get back his best, but I didn't realize that it was me who'd forsaken it. If that makes sense. And so again, that's one of those things that, I don't know, a good teacher lets you do your thing, but also reminds you when you're not doing the thing that could make you best at the thing they're teaching you how to do. Whoop-bam! You ever say something and then you love the way you said it? I dare say it happens a lot to me. I wouldn't do a podcast otherwise. I know that might sound egoic. I don't care. I like the way the songs Emily and or I write sound. And the best way I can put it is, if not, I'll change it. Like, it's not like, it's a little different with the podcast because this is all reactive in the moment. I don't plan most of this out, especially not the car casts. I might have a point or two. But with music, if you're hearing Emmy Rouge or Sean or my new band with Atticus and Rowan or Old Analog Smith, go to iTunes. By the way, if you go to iTunes, you can buy Emmy Rouge, our first three demos. They're recorded to a really brilliant degree. But they're definitely like, you know, they could be kicked up a notch. So, but you can get in there for like 99 cents. They're gorgeous. And by the way, there's where I'm real proud of my guitar, especially on Winnipeg. Go download Winnipeg, and listen to Emily's voice, the lyrics and my music. I think you'll really love it. And of course the Analog Smith stuff I mentioned. I'm starting to pump up my promos. Let's use my little platform as a way to make some bread. If you go buy like the Analog Smith album, by the time I think I'd make 6 cents or something from that. And that's self-produced. By the time iTunes pays us and then we give our producer a cut and pay ourselves. But hey, that's 6 cents, baby. That's 6 cents. And that's another thing Sensei Randy and I were talking about this morning, which is, you know, if you're charging, let's say, 7 cents below market value for something, you're actually just leaving 7 cents on the table every time you sell that thing. Now, it might be a promotion or it might be a way to kickstart something. I get it. I mean, I really undercharge for my acting classes. It's kind of on purpose. I fucking hate filling an acting class. It's my least favorite thing of it. It really is. People cancel at the last moment. You know, one day I'll have 35 people writing me going, I want to be in your class. And I'm like, okay, I'm starting in a month. And then, you know, the class always fills, but the day of, I'll have 5 people out of the blue cancel. I need to be a little better about the business side of it, just saying, no, you're not in the class till you pay. And I'm starting to move that way. But aside from that, I do undercharge kind of on purpose, partly because I often have to shift times and this and that. So it's a way to just, you know, if I'm not offering a certain consistency, then I think that warrants a bit of a rebate. But no reason to charge 7 cents less than that. And again, for me, that comes down to two things. That comes down to like a worth issue. And believe me, I deal with this with my class all the time. I mean, only about 2 months, or it might have even been when I was in Germany. It might have even been like 2 weeks ago where I just went, you understand that you're undercharging for your class. You're letting people sign up without paying. And this year alone, you've like starred in like 9 projects, including your first play in 14 years that got 4 out of 4 star reviews and your performance was widely praised. You are selling the film you directed using students from your fucking class who are going to get global exposure, and the play you directed using this work, using students from the class, sold out its run and won awards, and you're literally shooting weekly on set. Like, you're learning what the business is on a Friday, both from a business and an acting standpoint, and then you're teaching it to people on a Sunday. You're the probably, and somehow you want to offer a cut rate and let people pay late? How come? It's not how dare you, and it's not fuck them. It's how come? What's up in your sense of self-worth as an instructor that doesn't think you're worth charging based on that being your resume just for this fucking year alone? And that's an interesting one for me. I'm still figuring that out. Part of it is that I think it'll be easier to fill a class, and I want to do less of that legwork because, you know, I hate working. Standing in front of a class teaching for me is not working. Sorry. Going on to set is not working. Shooting headshots is not working. Teaching karate is not working. The coordinating of any one of those things, booking the job, creating the schedule, that's the work. You know, I talk about this. Creating the platform upon which I get to do the thing I love is the work. But I guess that's probably true for everybody. I mean, we're all hustling to find the flow. Hustle and flow, baby. Yeah, we is dog. You know, I mean, man is dog. That was my best Terrence Howard opening of Hustle and Flow impression. Hey, yo, Skinny Black. You remember me from back in the day. You remember me, Skinny Black. Always smoked blunt back in the day. That was pretty good, actually. I think that was pretty good. I think if you compare that to how he approaches Ludacris. Skinny Black, yo. Mixtape back in the day. God, that's good shit. Taryn Manning. Woo! Woo! Hints of Pensacola. Pensatucky. Pensatucky to come. We're not surprised how brilliant she is on Orange is the New Black after watching Hustle and Fro. So, yes. Excited to sort of go to the next level with all of it. And excited that I have somebody who, in a non-literal way, has always created that kind of foundation. And, you know, that is something. Like, I started taking karate before I knew I wanted to be an actor. Look, I've been a performer since I was 5. You know, from the second I started taking piano, it wasn't about playing piano. It was about playing piano for you. You know, it's always had that need. I love that need in me. I own that need. I want you to like me. I want you to like my performance. I really do. And it's funny because liking me isn't as important as liking my performance. It's funny. I don't love Adam Carolla, but I do love his podcast. Hope that makes sense. Like, some of his views and the way he goes on. I don't know if I like this guy. I really don't. I'm actually going to go see him do a show in Toronto because I want to feel his vibe in the room. But I love his podcast. So that's what his performance, because look, it's still a performance. It might feel intimate. I don't know. I contend that, you know, there's 8 people in the world who really know me. And the rest are getting a version, even if that's not on purpose. Either because of a situational, you know, the sliver gets carved out situationally. So people who only ever see me on set, I'm not being disingenuous with them. But even the role I'm playing will determine how I'm walking onto that set. And that's an intuitive, instinctive thing. So it's not some method where it's like, you can't look me in the eye and I'm only to be addressed as, you know, Jerry Van Dyke. Spoiler alert. One day I'm going to play a guy named Jerry Van Dyke. I don't know when, but fuck, that's a good name. So I'm like, call me Jerry. That guy just called me Sean. Fire him. That's not what I'm talking about. It's just, if I'm playing someone shy, I'm probably not stomping into the set singing, by the balls, let the rhythm come and take you by the balls. Trocaderos, caballeros, by the balls. But if I'm playing the fucking guy who's like owns the store or owns the whatever, I probably will. Get my juices up. Get the blood going. So those things are intuitive, instinctive. So someone might get a sliver of the Benz, Benzo, Bender, the Benzinator. You can call me any of those things, by the way. If we happen to be out at a fan signing and you're like, oh my God, Benzinator, can I get an autograph? I'll respond to that. Hell, I've mentioned this on the pod. You can even do Bend Over Benson. You can throw that one out there and I'll probably get a little tense. But I'll respond because I said I would. why not? Fuck it. Let bygones be bygones. Let all my grade 10 shame and pain be bygone. Wait a minute. He talks about that too much. You can't talk about that as much as he talks about it and then still call it a bygone. I think he's holding on to something there even though he says he's worked through it all. Duh. Fuck yes. Yeah. I'ma hold on to my pain. I'ma hold on to my shame. I'ma hold on to my woe is me. What would I be if I gave that up? What would I be? Let's see. Happy, joyous, and free, maybe? Oh, code again. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'd be nothing. That is, though, what I often fear, even if not consciously, is that these things that, in fact, bind me, I believe are what define me. Oh, shit. If there's any rappers out there, or maybe I'll use the strength of rhyming bind and define. Yo, I used to let the shit that defined me bind me. Wait a minute, it's the other way around. I used to let the shit that would bind me define me. I'm TMing that, okay? So anytime I go TM, I'm giving that to Bill Burr, TM. But if you ever want to go, I used to use the shit that would bind me to define me. I just coined that, by the way. I mean, this is how brilliance happens. You just heard it in a car. I used to use the shit that would buy me to define me. But now I defy you to try me. Now I defy you to defile me. Just try. No, I don't think defile. It sounds a little bit pedophile. Oh, I used to use the shit that would buy me to define me. I'd let my crazy neighbor, the pedophile, defile me. But I busted through the wall. So don't you dare rile me. Cause I'ma knock you down with my fists. No, that's not great. Cause I'ma bust through the wall to rile me. Don't you dare rile me. Cause I'ma put you into exile, see? That's not bad, cause then exile can go to like a just like you know, Jon Snow on the wall in Game of Thrones. You know. I'm gonna knock you out. I don't need no Uzi. I'll use these swords and stones. You see what's happening here? Like, this is... Yeah, whatever. You can YouTube that clip if you want. Remember, TM. Don't let the things that used to bind you define you. I do. And it doesn't work. Seriously, doesn't work. By the way, that includes supposed good things. I'd say in the last 2 years only have begun to be able to work through and gently begin to shed this idea that I was this leading actor on TV in my 20s, but that I haven't booked jobs like that since. Well, A, that's not really true. Those exact jobs, no, but I've had equally wonderful years financially and creatively, like many times over since then, but I was stuck in something that I thought was a good thing, i.e. a certain abundance of work, as that's who I am, and it didn't help, because what happened was every time I'd go shoot some awesome film somewhere, yeah, but it's not a lead role and I can't go buy a house. It's like, what? Wow, that's the version of that perfectionism, a way to subjugate myself, a way to take something amazing, like fucking amazing, being flown somewhere to act and get paid, and I want to make it less than that. I don't need to make it more than that. It doesn't have to be the best day of my life because I get to do it, but it sure ain't the worst. But I want to make it the worst because I want to take an egoic version of some, you know, vaunted nostalgic past and then go, that was the pinnacle of my life. That's how people peak in high school. And the one thing I didn't want to be is a mofo who peaked in his 20s and then boo-hoo, drank and did too many drugs for a while, And then what? I'm going to count myself out? Fuck no. Fuck no. Doesn't mean it didn't hurt. Doesn't mean it didn't cost. But I paid the cost to be the boss. Because I didn't let the things that used to buy me define me. Paid the cost. And honestly, did pay the cost to be the boss. And then guess what I did? Gave it up to God. He gets to be the boss. So I paid the cost to not be the boss. Ah, that's the better way to put it. I paid the cost to not be the boss. Didn't let the things that used to define me fucking buy me. I paid the cost to no longer be the boss. I didn't let the things that used to buy me define me.
Didn't let them define me. Stop it. I didn't let them define me. I'm going all the way to California. We're going all the way to the governor's office.
So, yeah. It's a constant struggle, though. That's for sure. That's why I say, don't let the things that used to bind you define you.
Don't let the things that used to bind you break. You got to shock your system.
Man, there's a video of Arnold. Oof! It's recent. And it's like a 40, you can look it up on YouTube. It's like a 45-minute-er. I've never seen someone who I adore, because I've always been an Arnold fan, speak so humbly after never having spoken humbly. You know, he always was just like, this movie, Junior, it's the best movie ever made. I'm the funniest guy on the planet. And, you know, that was his pitch, but part of the pitch was, oh, geez, Arnold, there you go. But in this one, remember, he's lost his wife, he's been outed as a philanderer, and, you know, it's sort of been revealed that for all his strengths, there's also a lot of weaknesses in that man. He didn't become the next president of the United States with the states reversing its laws about having to be born there. Like, it just didn't, that last aspect didn't work out as well as many of his other aspects. In any case, as he's talking about the way they used to lift and this and that, there's a humility and a plainness, and it's gorgeous to see. And I don't know, man, it's tough. Like, you'd have to have taken my journey with Arnold and my journey with myself, but it's so hard for me to understand. Again, I always say that thing we think is our strength probably isn't, and it might even be the thing people have to get over to like us. You know, seeing Arnold talk plainly about how he would lift, plainly about how him and Franco used to build walls in Venice as carpenters and construction guys. He was more proud of a wall he built that's like 3 feet high than of the picture of him on a wall that's 100 feet high. But he's posing in front of the picture. We're getting the Arnold we know. But then when he's showing us the wall, we're getting a man, not an icon, who actually made something with his bare hands, quite literally, and is going, yeah, we warranted these. Well, if they ever called, I'd come back and fix it. And like, the wall looks like shit. It's not even a great wall. But he built it. He did it. And the other stuff kind of comes as a result of response. The wall either works or not in relation to itself. It's kind of what I talked about music programs. You know, music programs are actually one of the best things you can do to train people how to be good at stuff. Because you can't just fucking, unless you're Mozart, sit down and play a piano. You have to read, you have to learn a new language, you have to practice. What could be better for learning applicable skills to basically life? And similarly, a lot of people who do construction or woodwork, you know, it either's going to stand up and stand the test of time or not. And it might not have been a great wall, but 40 years later, it was still there. So he should be proud of it. And in any case, that sort of humility, that sort of sense of like, it was so awesome. And I was like, man, sometimes I push the performance, right? I don't try to do it, but it's a very innate, habitual. And again, those things that used to serve us, sometimes we get to a point, whoa, or maybe the ego can be shed. So maybe I don't need the applause of you as much. That becomes an interesting one, because do I need it? No. Do I like it? Oh, fuck yes. Oh, fuck yes. Oh, Justin. Oh,
Is that not ready? Is it not ready?
It's fun. It's fun to play and perform. And that also is the interesting one. When someone's genuinely a goofball and genuinely likes to play a certain way, and other people go, oh, don't show off, or oh, don't be that. And you just want to go, fuck you, man. Just because you don't play the way I play doesn't mean the way I play is disingenuous. That's a real one I've always had to deal with. I talked about that with the accents of my parents. I always spoke a little differently, and being really into school, I never got made fun of for it, but it also doesn't make you quote unquote cool, you know. And drama teachers thinking I'm a dumb jock, and whatever, there being that indefinable aspect, I have often dealt with that idea. And I think that's why I'm so strong on the whole, like, who gives a shit what your sense of self is or what other people's sense of you is? Because we're all wrong anyways. I don't know who I am. I know I like to play, though. Like, I fucking love to play. And it's funny because I think it's Sensei Suino who says, like, do you want to play judo or play swords? I can't remember the phrase he uses. But I like that. Like, look, I might be picturing cutting someone's head off while I'm doing my sword work. But there's a sense of play about it. And maybe play's the wrong word. I think fullness, like, woo, like there's a giddiness. There's a joy maybe, even if it's going dark on something. I don't know, the specific, you get what I'm saying. It's not rocket science, it's excitement, you know? And again, sometimes excitement equals not cool. I've never been cool, ever. And if ever I've been cool, it's because someone else coincidentally blends something I'd just be doing anyways with a moment in time where that's not stupid or silly or overeager, you know. I mean, God, this whole dad bod thing. I texted the wardrober on a show I'm about to do, and I described my physique, and, you know, my resume says like 172 pounds. I was like, yeah, my resume's wrong. I'm like 192 and kind of rocking a dad bod, but still fit and lean within that. That's pretty accurate. She writes back, dad bod, sounds sexy. It's platonic. She's not flirting with me, but like, that's the thing to say these days. Well, that's just coincidental for me. That has nothing to do with a photo of Leonardo DiCaprio on the beach. I'm not trying to, oh, beards are cool, let me grow a beard. Ooh, dad bods are cool, let me, it's like, I'm just lucky. So now people who would normally, like, you know, maybe not hire me as the hot dad are like, hey, hire him as the hot dad. I'll take it. I'll fucking take it. although, again, shedding 10 pounds, let's see. What? How much money would I have to spend to shed 10 pounds from my Porsche? 10 pounds isn't crazy. You know, I just bought some torsion bars that are hollow for my rear. And I decided to spend the extra $90 for the hollow ones. That'll save me 10 pounds, I think. So, maybe not even. I don't know. You want to take weight off the rear of a 911 because the engine's out back. So I actually left the front one solid. So it's not even necessarily about an aggregate weight loss. It's about an intelligent weight loss. But anyways, for me to drop 10 pounds, that'd be good. That'd be good. That'd be good. For my car, I mean, I don't really, again, give that much of a shit. We'll see. I got my shirt off a bunch on this TV show coming up. I think it's for the web. Oh, God bless web series, man. Woof! I don't know anybody below 35 who's sitting in front of a TV kind of ever. I'd way rather said so. You know, people are always like, hey, when can I see your show? I'm like, well, set your VCR for Saving Hope Thursdays at whatever time it's on. I should know that. And they're like, huh? Oh, right, VCRs, ha, ha, ha. And I didn't say it as a joke. Because the last time I was sort of really recording stuff, it was on a VCR. So I love that I can just send someone a YouTube link and go, here, man, check it out. And yeah, so I'm excited about this. But we'll see if I give a shit about carrying a few LBs when I actually see myself. Facially, I don't. If I spend a lot of time talking about how I look, it's probably because I spend a lot of time thinking about how I look. Do with that what you will. Because, yeah, I'm a narcissist. It's also part of my career. I also have fun with that shit. Look, I used to fucking play with my mom's makeup case. That's how I got into the whole Kiss makeup. Emily and I will do the skulls or the sugar skulls or different stuff for Halloween. That's a genuine joy. That's fun. When I grow mustaches and stuff, that's fun. That's how I look. Now, what I luckily get to do is make how I look in relation to how I'm perceived as a career, right? Because that used to be, like, again, blah, 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 high school. But I used to wear, like, polyester 70 shirts before it was cool with velvet bell bottoms and long hair. I love that look. I think that look's fucking always been dope. And always will be. And all of a sudden, people are thinking differently about me. Now, that was confusing to me in high school. You know, I obviously had a lot of anger and stuff around that diminishes over time. But, you know, it was weird to put on what I just thought was awesome. Like, smiling, excited, can't wait to go to school because I love my outfit. And then just to be made fun of all day. But still love my outfit because, again, I might talk about my parents this or that, but the one thing they both fucking gave me was a sense of self so that if I like something, I knew I was right. There's no right, right? Like, I mean, you're either right in math or wrong, but when it comes to fashion or style, what I mean is I knew that that was a fucking badass outfit and always will be, and I still stand by that. So that was a weird conflict for me. How do you know you love something, but basically have to fight to, you know, and again, because I was so glibly clever, I could always kind of get my way out of a fight because I was scared to, as I come home from my sword work, and there's a reason I took karate, people. So I get to kind of work through a lot of that, but it has that depth or whatever. So that is something that now I get to have a bit more fun with and less pain with. I'll have my Fu Manchu mustache. Em will half make fun of it because she doesn't think it looks great. She'll half be like, this one actually looks better than your last one when you were meeting my family for the first time. You know? And try meeting your younger girlfriend's parents who aren't a ton older than you necessarily. You're older than her older brothers. And then you add a mustache to the mix. You know, whatever. It's a needless challenge, but I gotta be me. Or maybe I don't. What is me? That's the point, is that now I get to play with that a little more loosely. But no one's making fun of me for the Fu Manchu. And again, because I don't surround myself with people who might make fun of me, the response tends to be no response or, fuck, dude, that's dope. You can pull that off. Whether I can or not doesn't matter. It's that, why would I hang out with people who are going to go, that looks like shit? Like, what? If you're hanging out with people who just kind of randomly insult your choices, 86 those motherfuckers. When you drunk AF and you just hanging out in back, like, that was my favorite friend of Bay the other day. Okay, I'm hitting some traffic on my way cross town. Sad about the Blue Jays. Couldn't name you a player other than Bautista. Don't care. I love what that buzz did for Toronto. You know, it's like anything in life, right? People are happier when they're winning. It's a lot easier to chat with someone whose day's going well than someone whose day's going shitty. So when the city's going well, you know, everyone's smiling a bit more. They're letting you in traffic a little more. Maybe the rain today is pathetic fallacy. Pathetic fallacy. One of my favorite rhetorical devices. Why don't you all write in onto my Facebook page or tweet at me? Tell me what your favorite rhetorical device is. And whoever's most closely matches with my second favorite. Now, if it's pathetic fallacy, but it is pathetic fallacy, I suggest you be honest. I'll respect you more for it. But if it's not a pathetic fallacy, and you're like, mine is a parallel sentence structure, and then I'm like, wait, that's mine too. Is that even a rhetorical device? I'm going to have to go look it up. I was trying to sound really intelligent there, but I'm not. I'm not. Wait a minute. Didn't he just tell us how smart he was last podcast in English? I was lying. Everything Spock says is a lie. Captain Kirk is telling the truth. I am Nomad. I am Nomad. My mind is blown. Hope you're watching Saving Hope, people. Lane Berkeley. Hashtag Lane Berkeley. We love Lane Berkeley. Lane Berkeley might not always do what we want him to do, but we love him for doing it. Is that true? Is he a guy we love to hate? See for yourselves, folks. Saving Hope. Doing a little stint on that. I think next week is my last ep for... I don't know if I can say anything.
I think next week's my last ep. Or maybe I'm on every ep.
Ah! Damn you, current climate, where things just don't roll out in their own time. And we can all basically, like, wreck the plot of the new Star Wars. If we're in the movie. And then you get sued for, like, a lot of money. I don't think I'm going to get sued for Saving Hope stuff. And I think that's it, folks. Really appreciate you guys spreading the word. Watching the ratings go up and up. We're always in the top 100 of the podcast comedy for the Podomatic. And then, again, like I started this podcast talking about my karate teacher, it's actually on me. Because if I post regularly, you guys listen regularly, and then we really climb. I don't know to what end. I really don't know. I don't know why I'd ever stop doing this. It seems pretty fucking fun for me. And I think you guys are digging it. So, I think that's it. It's starting to rain. My target doesn't care because my top was properly sealed. And these things can leak, but this one don't. So anyways, lots more podcasts. Definitely going to be sneaking in the car cast as often as possible before the winter. And then we'll probably end up in studio a little bit more with some more guests and stuff. I have a few lined up, and we just keep getting busy. It's, again, jumping in the car, going somewhere for an hour equals podcast. Stopping my life. Having someone over, setting up the mics. It's not a huge deal, but it's definitely the difference between overlaying one thing to another and separating one thing from another. And c'est la vie, that is the difference. And you know what? Lest you think I'm working 15 hours a day, I'm not. But when I'm working 8 to 12 hours a day, that free 2 hours, I want to chill with my girl or chill with myself. Or chill with some mates or drive to karate. Gonna be doing that a lot more. Thank you for that call, Sensei. You guys are the best. Love you. This is Chatting Between Takes, and that's a wrap. I'm sorry, I just had to pick up again, even though we just said that's a wrap. So this is like a hidden track. There will be blood, gallons of the stuff. Tell me what hidden track album that's from. You know what I'm saying? Free Chatting Between Takes mug. I'm gonna say this. I would literally vote to give Rob Ford head while Doug Ford fucks me and Stephen Harper jizzes on my chest. Splooge, splooge, splooge. Daily, if it could alleviate this fucking traffic in Toronto. Like, how is the Gardner clogged for 2.5 years? And that's the schedule, which means that it's not even going to be that. We can build, like, skyscrapers downtown in about a weekend, but we can't repair a highway in 2.5 years. Like, it's ridiculous. And by the way, lest you think, no, you really wouldn't want those three guys coming in and on you. Here's the thing. I think I'd be so attractive to those guys that it would really only take them a minute or less to get off. Which is, okay, so I gotta, you know, do the narsty. Take the bukkake from the Republican triumvirate there. But it's only going to last a minute plus a quick shower. If I'm rushed, we don't even need the shower. Just a warm towelette. A moist towelette will do. But that would save me then like hours a day, right? So not a bad payoff. Hey, honey, We've proven you're a whore. Now we're just negotiating. And that's a wrap.